Good afternoon, good evening, and I want to personally thank you for showing up for a 5 o'clock session to walk a mile in a few shoes with us. We'd really, really love to have you with us. And just a couple logistics things. If you've got your cell phones, please turn them off. And if you're interested in tweeting, it's E11_SESS120. And we really appreciate your evaluations at the end.
Yeah, I'd like to also thank all of you. You're real warriors waiting it out till this point. We know that we're in between you and more fun tonight, so we'll try and make this valuable experience for you. University of Wisconsin is the flagship institution in the state of Wisconsin. Been in existence for over 150 years. It's a land-grant institution of about 950 acres on the shores of Lake Mendota in Madison, Wisconsin. We have something called the Wisconsin Idea, and it's the principle that education should influence and improve people's lives beyond the university classroom. This is the principle that was adopted in the early 1900s by, first attributed to UW President Charles Van Hise, and it has been a guidance point for faculty, staff, alumni at the university for over a decade. This principle means that the work that we're doing is designed to improve all of humanity.
So you may have been wondering why we waited on introductions, and it's because just talking about our roles, both our historical roles and our current roles, is kind of the fundamental aspect of this presentation. So we're each going to go through and talk about where we came from and where we are today, and then the impact that that's had on our ability to do our jobs. So my name is Dan Jacobson. And up until about 15 months ago, but who's counting, I was the director for application services at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. I also, prior to that, was the director for customer service there as well, and the common thread is that I was always in the central IT organization. My focuses were on enterprise applications and trying to stay relevant while still paying attention to an aggregate population of 40,000+. I had to, of course, worry about things like scale, manageability, cost, and not being too focused on any specific population. About a year and a half ago, I actually had no intention of leaving my job. It was a great position. We'd been at the we'd been in Urbana and Champaign for about 10 years, had a wonderful life there, lots of good friends, some of them are in the audience. But I was interested in a future leadership role that combined library and IT functions, as well as the ability to see a direct impact more on a personal level than the aggregate level. Three independent people contacted me within about a week about the position and the role at Madison that I took that I'll tell you about in a second. And so for me, it felt very much like a moment of synchronicity. So right now, the position I'm in is that I'm the CIO for the School of Education at UW-Madison, and I'm also the director for a combined service organization called Merit, and we are the School of Ed's library, IT support, and media support folks as well. We have about 2,000 undergrad, 1,000 graduate students, and about 150 faculty. We have 9 departments that go everywhere from medical sciences all the way to the art and dance department for the school. And there's a very strong focus on excellence.
So I want to take a moment and send a little bit more background to what we're doing. Change is something that is constant. You've heard that, it's overused, but I'm going to argue that it's not only constant, it's ever increasing in its rate. And the ability to realign our strategic priorities, our organizations, our staff, our resources to that change requires adaptive leadership and requires people who are comfortable with change and comfortable with putting on new roles and seeing things from a different perspective. And being able to deal with the fact that the fiscal, the political, the organizational landscapes are going to change. Seth Godin, in the keynote, if you were fortunate enough to see that, talked about destroying the perfect to enable the impossible. And so normal, or perfect, is not only boring, it's probably not normal tomorrow. So making sure that we have leaders that are adaptive to that change is critical. And so what we want you to think about today as we tell our stories and hopefully invite you, and I hope you will, tell yours, we want you to think about how we can create situations to help staff practice applied situational adaptive leadership. So with that, Bruce, would you like to tell yours?
So each of us on the panel has had to adapt to new and sometimes temporary permanent role changes, and this has challenged us. And one thing that we have in common and the reason why we want to do this is that we all believe that these role changes have been beneficial to us. They've helped us tremendously. In my particular case, I've had a lot of role changes. Most of it was at one institution, but I've worked every part of the institution. I've gone from being the budget manager at the campus at Milwaukee to being an assistant dean working in academic units for 17 years, three different schools. Then I became our PeopleSoft. I drew the short straw and became our PeopleSoft project manager for the campus. And Then I went into the CIO track, but when I was an assistant dean, I was a distributed IT leader as well for 17 years. And so I was the nightmare for a whole lot of central IT people because I built the first local area networks. Some of the cable I've been told that I strung is still up above the rooms quite a few years later after some NetWare 2.0. But what those experiences have done have allowed me to be able to see things a little bit differently, and frankly have given me empathy, because every time I've gone into a situation, I look back and I think about how I was wrong about assumptions and so on. So I think that these situations that we find ourselves getting into, new ones, are extremely valuable, and that's one reason why we're here to talk about that and to talk that up.
So I'm Kathy O'Brien. I'm currently the Director of User Services for the Division of Information Technology at UW-Madison. I'm going to go a bit further back. In 1981, I wanted to teach, and my background is in teaching. And I came out and I taught in the south side of Chicago, for those of you who may be familiar with it, 83rd and Stony Island, and I taught there for 5 years. I was the only Caucasian in my classroom, and it was truly a fish-out-of-water experience. Ended up in a suburban school 5 years later, had a child, needed to make a bit more money. And then, purely out of luck, or I might have said lack of luck at the time, I became a trailing spouse, and I moved every 3 or 4 years. So from Chicago, in a suburban district at that point, I ended up in Shawnee, Oklahoma. It's about 48 miles southwest of OKC. You could define it as the middle of somewhere. And this is in July. Oh, no. And in Oklahoma, unbeknownst to me, school starts mid-August. So there's not a lot of teaching positions available, and I want to teach, and I need to teach. And I decide to interview for the one remaining position in Macomb, and that's in the middle of nowhere, about 30 miles south of Shawnee. So I put on my suit and I put on my nylons and I put on my pumps and I drive to Macomb and I drive right past it. There's not a stop sign, there's not a gas station, there's just a whole bunch of outbuildings. And I arrive and I have an interview and I don't remember what time it was, but let's say it was 11 o'clock and I start looking around. All the outbuildings are locked up and the only thing I see out in that field somewhere is I see this guy with his huge hat and he's sitting on a tractor and he's mowing the lawn. And I think, well, okay. Out I go, in my heels, in my nylons, in my suit, sinking in the red clay, because Oklahoma, it either rains or it doesn't for a very long time, and it had rained. And I say, I'm here to meet the superintendent, and I have an appointment. He says, sure, That's all he says, and he walks all the way back. And he's watching me, and I'm not doing real well on these heels, and I'm not doing real well across this field. And he unlocks the door to the first building, and he unlocks to the key what looks like the office, and he unlocks the key to the inner room, and he sits down behind the desk. He is the superintendent. He is the person I have an appointment with, and I immensely enjoyed my time there. I was only there for 1 year. He helped me get my first computer coordinator job in Oklahoma, and I've been a computer coordinator K-12 all the way to the Gold Coast of Chicago and in a suburb of Atlanta. And from there, I journeyed to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Recently, I served as interim director for academic technologies, and it took me back to my old world because I've been steeped in the metrics, in the operations, in the process improvement of user services. And it was quite a journey and quite a cultural change. And so I learned to be a cultural traveler because I had to, but in retrospect, I deeply appreciated it.
So I can honestly say, even though that's kind of a theme, that those are shoes that I've never walked in, Kathy. However, the fundamental theme that we really want you to reflect on in this presentation, and we're going to ask you about this in a little bit, is what might it look like at your institution if you actually made these kinds of practices, these kinds of change of function, intentional? So if you actually built that into your employment structure, what benefits might you get?
And so what we'd like to do at this point is we'd like to reflect on some of the positive experiences we've had. Or perhaps we'll start with the negative. Let's start with the negative and on the upside. Some of the negative experiences we've had traveling in different shoes into different cultures. Some of the assumptions perhaps we made going in that led to big faux pas.
I'm very happy to share one of these negatives because it was an experience that I don't really think I fully understood why I was failing so badly until I reflected on it, having been an edge IT person for a little bit. And that was when I was the Director for Application Services. I started a campaign around campus meeting one-on-one with people, like I would eventually become, to say, you know what, we really need to think about common architecture standards. We need to think about common development platforms. We need to focus on this right now because when we work together on these kinds of projects, we benefit. Sounds great, right? I mean, sounds ideal.
How'd
it sounds
work,
perfect.
How'd that work out for you?
It didn't work out so well. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Moss. So I learned a lot of things. I learned that we don't all speak the same language. So when I was saying things like IT service management and best practices, I was, for some of my colleagues, that was just fuzz. That was not the world that they were living in within their environment, within their schools. I also learned very quickly that we have a very uneven access to resources. So while I was feeling resource starved, some of the folks in the schools and colleges were barely holding on for dear life. And so while they said, that's a nice idea, there was absolutely no capacity to even think about it past that initial conversation. And finally, we simply don't all have the same goals and priorities. So we all have the same mission, ostensibly. We all have the same focus. We're all at a university. But my goals in terms of serving a population of 40-plus thousand people were definitely not the same goals as the School of Fine Arts and their capacity and their areas of interest. So complete failure on my part. Still think it was a good idea. But now that I'm on the other side, I would have a very different perspective when someone came and talked to me about that.
My earliest negative experience is one that really still lives with me till today. It's kind of a benchmark, and that is I was serving as the budget manager for my campus, and one of the traditions on our campus is we had a really good controller, and he would develop people, and then they'd move out into the schools and colleges, and he was really, really proud of that. And so we ended up with a lot of people who were trained centrally, then moving out into the edge. And it seemed to work pretty well. So I was somewhat young at that point. And while that isn't an excuse, it is a reason for what I'm going to tell you happened. I went out, I interviewed for a position as assistant dean for the College of Engineering, and I thought I'd done just a wonderful job. I was telling the dean how I was really looking forward to controlling the budget in the college. That was my background. And I couldn't understand why that didn't seem to go over. That was Fred Landis, his name was, and Fred was just pretty silent throughout. So I'm just wondering what's going on. I thought you wanted me because, you know, my budget expertise and so on. And afterwards, Fred didn't hire me, not even close. And he took me aside and he said, just one little bit of information for you if you interview again, and that is, out here, the deans are in charge. So it's a good thing to remember. And I thought about that, and what accounts for that, besides youthful indiscretion, is a lack of familiarity with the culture. That's how we worked in the controller's office. It was seemed pretty straightforward to me. We managed budgets. We had a controller in charge of finance and budget for the university and so on. But the importance of the lesson, it was actually as humiliating later to, you know, to get that. I'd never fallen on my face so badly on something. I thought about that a lot, and that guides me really to this day. The fact is, you need to understand something about the culture of the area that you're going in, and more importantly, what your place is in that culture. Since that time, I've adopted a philosophy that service is the profession that I've chosen. I'm very proud of having chosen that. I forgot it at one point in my career, but I remember it now, and I help others who are around me to remember it, because our universities need us in these positions, but they need us within a context. And so that was a negative experience, but it has served me to this day and helped me to be consistent. I've earned a lot of humility in my life, but that was the starting point of really earning a good, solid base of humility.
So a more recent experience. When I first came to UW-Madison, I came as the training manager. And one of the very first programs I was asked to assume responsibility for was student technical training, and it was to train students to take IT jobs on campus. It was the dot-com era. And so I came in, and I invited faculty and I invited IT leaders on campus to come and talk to me about what they expected in the program. But I was also very anxious and out of insecurity trying to prove that I knew something about this. Indeed, I did. K-12 was my world. I knew what the students were coming in with, at least a broad base, Oklahoma, Georgia, Illinois, been there, seen that. And so I came with baggage and I came to help. And, you know, when you make those kind of assumptions up front without listening first, without really picking up on where student technical training was, that it only existed 1 year at that time, you may think you're carrying the right things in the suitcase, and indeed what you're carrying is truly baggage. And so I've got an open web conferencing phone. I've got 3 or 4 people around the table. I've got food. I've got coffee. And I start out with, well, what worked last year? And the person on the phone starts screaming. I had no idea what had happened the year before, how the schools and colleges did not get an opportunity to hire staff, did not have a stay in curriculum. And so I opened it thinking, we'll hear about this, we'll get it out. And instead it turned the conversation from what can we do into the background and the homework and the context and the sensitivity I should have had before I came to that table. And so we come with the best of intentions, but we also need to think about who comes into the room, what's their experience, and take the time and the opportunity to listen to them, to walk side by side through their eyes, through their experience individually, so you know what you're bringing into that room.
So question for you is anybody willing to share an experience like we're talking about in terms of something where they made cultural assumptions and erred because of it? Everyone has done this perfectly their entire careers. or it's just 5:20 in the afternoon and we want to get out. All right. In either case, we'll move on and do one round of positive stories, and then we'll talk a little bit further about some ideas that we do have for institutionalizing these kinds of changes like we were talking about earlier. So I'll start, and going right back to that idea about IT service management. So in my new organization, there has not been a focus on a kind of a formalized thinking about IT service management. There was an attempt at a service catalog a few years ago, and it was a very, very good start. But it didn't pick up speed, and right now the new process actually has, and I'm very excited about that. So I was able to think about this in terms of scaling what it means to develop a service catalog at a school or college level instead of a university level. We were able to demonstrate that value by working with central IT architecture, but then also talking with the dean, talking with my employees, talking with other people in the school to say, look, if we do this one time, we're going to be able to populate the knowledge base. You're not going to have to update the website all the time. You're going to have a continuation of operations plan developed out of it. It's going to be a write once, deliver in a bunch of places sort of application, and that got people excited. So this has been a real success story of taking something that is normally thought of as an enterprise-heavy sort of process and scaling it appropriately for a school or college.
I would add that a couple components here. One of the things that are positive is that I have learned not to ascribe motivations. And I have done that consistently now. And it is so baked into my DNA now, having, you know, done this badly, that I find it's very good to question and to be able to assume the best. I have found that 99% of the people I work with care deeply about the university. Faculty care deeply about the university. The staff do. They just show it in different ways. They have different cultures. So one of the things that I have done since coming to the University of Wisconsin 2.5 months ago is that our central IT organization has a budget, and the budget, you know, is quantified and so on, and so we have a staff development budget component to that. But the rest, distributed IT leaders, people like Dan, who I greatly value. I want more senior IT leaders out on the campus like Dan, who I can work with. But in an academic unit, when you are really strapped for cash, it's faculty don't have enough money to travel, to present, and so on. So what I did is dedicated a substantial part of the discretionary budget that I have. It's not large, but it's totally devoted to people outside my division for leadership development, for development in some activities that will help us to build a shared vocabulary on campus, and to help us to move forward together as a cohesive team, because the problems that we're facing are so deep and pervasive with the transformation that's taking place, that it's going to need all hands. And for that, you need leadership. I cannot do this alone. I shouldn't do it alone. I need help with that. Every school, Dan's closer to his faculty, he's closer to his dean, and he's got counterparts in other units who are closer to their units. Now, I'm helped by the fact that I was in his shoes. I did that job, so I understand that he gets the snot kicked out of him occasionally back in his unit, just like I do when I go out in front of a hostile area. There are different dynamics that are going on. So my goal is create the ability to raise the entire boat, invest in people, demonstrate with some real behavioral commitment in terms of funding to help with the training and the development. And we do that. We have a program in the CIC called IT Leaders, program. CIC is the Big Ten University of Chicago, and we've had that consortium together for close to 30 years now, I think. It's a very powerful sharing environment. So we do IT Leaders, put on by Moore Associates, and have been so positive for UW-Madison that we're actually now doing it in the rest of the UW system, and we're sending people to it. Half of the people going this year are from schools, colleges, and divisions, so that we can start to, you know, invest and build that community up. And I would say that is an absolute outcome of the fact that I know, having been on the other side, how challenging it is budgetarily, where you stand in the order of getting funding, plus you need the fact that it's very hard to know how to align and to participate unless you all come to it with a certain base set of skill sets in the bargain.
And so I've been involved with administrative process redesign, and it's called APR on our campus, and it comes out of the administrative side of the house, the Vice Chancellor of Administration. And the idea is process improvement. It uses the Lean Six Sigma model. But one of the most powerful tools it uses is called the voice of the customer. So it assembles a team of cross-functional, cross-departmental folks to look at a particular issue and then invites them to take a considerable amount of time to walk through the process in the way that the different customers, both internal and external, and the folks involved in the process actually see it. And it's a lot like feeling the elephant. You know, you feel the tail, you might think it's one thing, and you feel the trunk, and perhaps it's another. And it gives you both the context and the quantitative data to say this process takes way too long, it has way too much diversity, it needs to be shifted in skinnies, and it enables you to tell a story informed by data, but a story around it that can be meaningful. And so as I go back to where we are with analytics and learning, academic analytics, and I remember my 7 months as the interim director of academic technology, knowing I was going to return to my group, coming from user services, a help desk can bury you in data. I mean, there's so much data, it's just plain noise at a certain point. And when you review, for example, academic technology budgets, and you ask how many people did you talk to, and you know, the numbers might be there, they might not, but it's not really about the numbers, it's about the context. And remembering my experience in K-12, and remembering No Child Left Behind, and remembering that if you don't get involved in the conversation, if your reaction is a knee-jerk, that's not what education's about, it might be done to you. So it's really important to be able to cross that bridge between the quantitative data that seems rather superficial when you're dealing with one-to-one relationships and instructional design and faculty sharing and learning pedagogy, and you're also thinking about what is the context in which we do our work? You have to be able to tell the story, but yet you have to have the metrics behind it. And so crossing those two worlds, those two cultures, was extremely important, and I tried. How successful I was remains to be seen, and will only be told across time, to make sure that as I worked there and we defined the services to the best of our ability, at least for that year's operational plans, we talked about not just what we're doing, but what we're doing in terms of a language that could be understood both on an operational and a metric-driven level, and also from the higher order and the critical thinking skills that it's engaged. So having that viewpoint, not 360 by any stretch of the imagination, but broader than just one single area, was helpful.
So we're going to move on and talk about potential strategies for doing this within your organization. If anybody wants to share a positive story about changing roles, that would be great. Otherwise, I would ask you to consider doing something, which is to help people in terms of something that they can take away from this. If you want to use the Twitter hashtag for this, which is, let me pull it up again, E11_SESS120, and use that to record some ideas that you have in terms of developing what we call applied situational leadership or institutionalizing empathy. That would be great. And then that's something that people can walk away with.
So I'm going to ask you, how many tweeters in the room? All right, it's on your backs.
how many people are willing to brave the mic and say, you know, I lived in two worlds, I wore different shoes, and it taught me this. Please, mic. And thank you.
So mine's a negative story.
Okay.
I thought of it just as you said, we'll move on. So, I'm Kurt Hilligus from Princeton University. I did my graduate work at Princeton University, and in 1995 switched over from being a graduate student in chemistry to being an assistant admin. And I learned very quickly that academics undertake discourse much differently than IT people do. Barking dogs might be a good way to describe chemists in a room who are refining an idea. And IT people don't like to be barked at. And it didn't take me too long to figure out. I did have one director in OIT who called me a large string of adjectives starting with arrogant and going on. But I finally learned a lesson, and now I can speak with a totally different discourse. I think that if I went back into the chemistry field, I might end up in the corner in the fetal position. But so, big change.
Thank you for sharing.
Go ahead.
Please. Part of trying on other shoes is the opportunity to listen to other people and understand that we're really all experiencing the same thing.
I don't know if my transition is as much of a change as some of these other ones, that story, but I went from being a full-time sort of sysadmin, database administrator, to being a manager of the entire group that supports computer science at Rutgers University. So that was a major change because you can't deal with people in a technical fashion. You have to be the empathy that you're speaking of. You have to really develop that skill and problem solving in a different way than I'm used to as being such from a technical background. So I found that to be a big change. So,
go ahead.
I'm from George Washington University. I started at the university as an hourly central IT employee, then got a permanent job in the library at a point where technology meant the ISDN lines that connected to the terminals so that they could use the library system. So IT grew, and I was in your kind of a role where put in the first LAN, put in the first wireless network, first microcomputers, and so we were kind of pushing the envelope. And there was a point at which we had done much within the library that the university then wanted to apply, so I went over into the central IT. And I remember distinctly when I was in the distributed role, there was one point in particular where I just wanted the help desk to put in the blessed ticket so I could get the problem fixed. And I remember being very strident to a point where some people who said they knew me just didn't quite grasp that. And then I came over into the central IT role, and I had people fussing at me because why wouldn't I just put in the problem and get it fixed? And I very clearly saw myself in the past and recognized how I was failing to appreciate the position of the help desk people that I was trying to spur to action. And I just, that sticks with me to this day in my user services role.
How many of you, if I see a show of hands, came out of the private sector? Okay, good number. So most people I talk to from the private sector who are new to higher ed, the first question they have is, what is wrong with you people?
Why don't you just tell them what to do?
You know, talk about a world turned upside down. Our ex-deputy CIO, and I have private sector experience as well. And even in K-12, particularly in the smaller districts, and I had one superintendent look at me and say, I'm the sheriff here, honey. We don't consult the board. And out of Chicago, you sure did. He said, you know, you're used to a situation or an organization that looks like this. What you need to do is this. We're like this, and that said it all. Totally upside down. The world had changed.
Higher education, I would argue, for those of you who've come in from the private sector, higher education has worked pretty well for close to 1,000 years, the way it's been organized. It's organized in a way that optimizes the creation of knowledge. The culture develops in a way, as Kurt was saying about chemistry, this debate and discussion, very intense and so on. And it works. And so one thing to keep in mind, there are very few stable organizations, institutions that have been in play this long. So there must be something about this that works pretty well. And there's a good lesson in that, because we're coming into a setting where things have worked pretty well for people. And they're really not going to be changing based on fads or someone from the private sector who says they have better ideas generally. So patience is something that I would advise for anyone coming in. Get to learn it and then see perhaps you can influence a bit, but not by telling people they're wrong.
Or assuming that you're there to fix it because you're implying they're wrong. You know, you think about today and how so much of IT is a commodity, and it becomes the relationship between the service providers, whether they be above the campus and interinstitutional, or whether they be commercial, or whether it be a combined effort. Talk about a culture mix there. Think about it. But it's also about making sure that trust is your primary coin. It's the coin of the realm. If you're going in the service layer model and you're thinking about edge and you're thinking about leveraging, it's trust that is the linchpin. And trust comes from the ability to communicate in a way that has not only integrity, but also acknowledges that you have similarities and you have differences, and that's not a value statement, that's just fact. So one of my favorite readings, and I'm just going to throw this in here lately, is Catherine Schultz's work. It's called Being Wrong, and the gist of it is, and there's a great TED Talk on it if you want a snippet, is that the whole idea of calling something wrong is simply wrong. If failure is not an option, then neither is success, said our keynote this morning. And what Catherine Schultz says is learning is the art of being wrong. We need adaptive leaders. We need them to try, fail quickly, learn, and move on. And we need to develop opportunities for them to exercise that skill. The teacher in me says, you practice, you get better at it. You get thrown into Shawnee, and you get thrown into Atlanta, and you get thrown back into Illinois, and you move over to Wisconsin. And one way or another, you're going to swim. And eventually, you come to, in my case at least, realize it was truly an opportunity. It was a blessing.
Well, and the grounding is you're in an academic institution. If you think about it, how much of your faculty research actually turns into published material in journals or in grants and so on? Research, by its very nature, is about 10% or so of it that actually moves on. So they could define that as failure, but they don't. They define it as you have to take some risks to be able to advance. So you're within that context. I think we'd like to move now to talk a bit about some applied situational leadership. And, for example, what are some examples of opportunities that exist to be able to experience things a little bit differently? And we're going to seed this conversation a bit to get started. But, again, we'd like to hear from you. I'd like to have people come up to the mic and really talk about some opportunities. One of the things I had done when I was at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee is that we had a fair number of staff in our applications development department and our system end department that just basically liked to stay in their offices. And so we created opportunities as simple as picnics that we would have at different parts of the university. The only problem was in Wisconsin we had to get those into the 1 week that is good weather. but so we would have those, and it's surprising. not a huge organization, 125 employees, but how many people didn't know each other, and putting them into those situations then allowed them to interact with each other, understand. We had creative people, designers, graphic designers, and we had DBAs. We had sysadmins, and as you might imagine, cultures were a little bit different. So that helped. I also gave our staff the ability to go out on campus at campus-wide events to engage in social events. What faculty told me was that once they got to know our staff as human beings, they liked them. They found out that they cared. And I had to try and convince our staff of that. You know, you're actually likable. Just go out there and show it. Just get to know people. Get in the golf league. So we did things like that, and we encouraged golf league and so on. Then we had some job sharing. We moved around about 40 people. I interviewed every employee in my first couple years, and they moved around to different roles in the organization after they told me what they were passionate about, because a lot of them got locked into careers they didn't like because we had this archaic HR system that only rewarded people for being supervisors. So we ended up with mismatches and so on. So we gave them a chance to self-identify where they might do better, and when vacancies occurred, we moved around and so on. What other ideas do you have that can suggest opportunities to be able to develop that flexibility or that awareness? Yes.
They all put in a mentor program.
Yeah.
So we had two tracks where we had a leadership track and a technical track to have transfer of knowledge and some mentorship with a protege. 6 months you'd sign up as a pair. Again, self-identifying or encouraged by a unit in our central IT. And then we started to spread it out to the distributed IT folks. Mm-hmm. And try to make that connection, and that's where we're starting to get some big hits in terms of relationship building and, you know, joining the two worlds as opposed to us and them. It's a way to have it be a we.
So Chuck Thompson and I, who's I think they're saying they're tweeting or something, did a lot of this at the University of Illinois collaboratively with Central IT, a lot of kind of either formal or informal mentoring networks and social stuff together to build those relationships. One other thing, though, on the opposite end of the spectrum that I wanted to mention was a very formal relationship that we created where we found a service. In this case, it was institutional chat, where there was a lot of expertise out on the edge and a little bit within the central IT organization as well. And so we actually developed a system where there was co-administration between central IT and the three or four people out on the edge who are already doing this extremely well. And this, we also had shared ticket management then of the same system. And so it was kind of the opposite. It's a very technical way of approaching this, but it really developed a nice team synergy between all these various groups on campus.
So I want a quick poll. How many of you have staff? Okay. How would you invite your staff to step into another pair of shoes for 20 minutes, for an hour, for 3 weeks, for 3 months? How could you operationalize exercising that muscle, that adaptive leadership, that adaptive style? And I'll throw one. I'll seed it a bit. So when I was fortunate enough to become part of the IT Leaders program that Wisconsin offered, one of the things that they had at the time was a large project, and the first rule in the large project is you couldn't know anything about it. Nothing. I ended up in digital libraries. That's a big scope, and I know nothing about it. And I remember thinking, why am I doing this? And I'm spending most of my time here. And I really learned not only to do what I naturally do, because I like to read, I like to study, but to listen. And to really listen for those things from which not only could I learn, but I could contribute. I could find that nugget in the room of a conversation or a meeting to which I had no knowledge, no experience, and try to make a contribution once I had listened and learned enough. And so I invite my staff to be involved in at least one project, one committee, one birds of a feather, one community of practice, pick your name, they know nothing about. And you'll be surprised when you listen, you'll find that nugget. What can we do to make that something they can practice intentionally?
And one of the things that I think we do really well at the college is encouraging staff at any level to have the opportunity to be adjunct faculty and to support individualized.
Thank you. So one of the things I think that we do at the college really well is encouraging staff pretty much at any level to be adjunct faculty, to participate as faculty for individualized learning with students on contracts. And that's one thing that I really encourage with my staff, to keep them kind of connected with what's going on the academic side of the institution. I'm the director of network services, so we feel very far removed from sort of the academic cycle of things and connection to the academic side of the institution. And I think that really brings them close when they start working with a student who's trying to do something, and they'll bring that back and tell people what they're working on, and people kind of get excited about we're helping someone to learn and grow, and I think that helps us stay connected.
You know, how about something like guest lecturing? We did some of that where I made inroads with some of our academic units, and we've got some talented people here. How about a guest lecture or part of a lecture in an area of expertise, talking about security from our security officer within the School of Information Studies course that has components that deal with privacy issues and so on. There are many opportunities to stretch, get outside, get connected. Yes, go ahead.
Barry Sutton from Princeton University, and we have an ambassador program where every department has an ambassador in OIT, and you just go, and like you said, very similar to what you were saying before, you go and listen. You're not there to solve all their problems, but we might be able to put them in the right direction, and occasionally you do solve their problems, and it does help you help somebody else.
Thank you.
Go ahead. I know one of the things that we had done at my last place of employment was even the director of information services took time to come down and sit on the help desk. And that's one of the things that I admire about our new CIO. He really does that a lot. He's actually scheduled on the help desk for 2 hours a week. He comes out there and works with the students, and it, you know, it makes other people realize that, hey, you know, maybe I need to take a step back. And, you know, a lot of people now are getting more involved in seeing what the help desk does. They've never really understood it. So, by the way, I'm from University of Wisconsin La Crosse, so not too far away from you guys.
Thanks.
You know, those fighting fires, those opportunities when you're faced with the fire in your face to get out there and pitch in and do something you weren't planning on doing, are truly opportunities. They're not necessarily obstacles. And the help desk is a great example of that. We do a lot of that even in the back-to-school period at Madison. And I think about the new human resource system rollout, and I think about how we have help desk agents right now masquerading. They're wearing someone else's clothes behind that phone, right? As payroll and as HR systems and as benefit experts, because you know what? We're all in the same fight together, and we're all trying to provide that support.
There could be a slight variation on that theme. When we launched PeopleSoft at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, we had some of our developers sit in the help desk. They had never done that before, where we actually moved them over into the help desk, and it was good for two reasons. First of all, they knew a lot, and they could help everyone else who was doing that kind of work. And second is they saw what a nightmare it can be at times when you are in that area. And that was transformational for our developers to do that. First they said, no, we don't want to do it. We're not comfortable with doing it. And everyone loved them. I mean, it was just fabulous.
I did a couple of those, and the other directors within sites were encouraged at Illinois to start in the first days of the year to send the help desk. And I learned how frustrating it can be to explain to a very stoned student that they actually do have two passwords, and that's why they can't get into Blackboard. On that, I do want to close, actually, and I can't advance your slides for some reason. Click on there. There you go. So I want to tell you very briefly in closing about something else that I do, which is I run workshops on IT leadership and improv. And one of the things about improv is that you've got people on stage, and every single one of them is trying to create a shared universe. So right now, the only thing when you start off on a scene, I've got some ideas in my head, you do too. The only thing that the audience will connect with is if those ideas intersect, if we have agreement that this is actually a ball or a cup or a lizard or whatever it might be. The same thing is true for our conversations and our interactions. Unless we actually have some shared commonality, there's nothing that can be constructed in our universe in terms of IT. And I think that these kinds of experiences are something where you can have a lot of that overlap. So thank you very much for coming. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.